Welcome to MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue, and we're coming to you from the campus of Middle Tennessee State University in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and the studios of WMOT-FM. One of the biggest events of each fall semester at MTSU is the annual Salute to Veterans, which is tied in with a home football game around Veterans Day. This year, the ceremonial tribute is part of the Blue Raiders contest against Arkansas State, scheduled for November 19th at Floyd Stadium. To make our own contribution to the MTSU Salute to Veterans, we thought it would be appropriate, in this, the university's 100th year, to look back at how World War II transformed the campus from a quiet, mostly female teachers' college into a catalyst for national defense and positioned it for enormous post-war expansion. Our guest is retired MTSU history professor Dr. Ellen Garrison, whose research is chronicled in an essay she wrote for the book Middle Tennessee State University, A Centennial Legacy, edited by Dr. Jan Leone, history professor and interim associate dean of the College of Liberal Arts. Dr. Garrison will come marching in after a paragraph or two from MTSUnews.com. Dr. Ellen Garrison, welcome. Thanks for being with us today.
Glad to be here.
You delivered a paper or a presentation at the Biennial Holocaust Conference in October that talked about World War II and its impact and how it really turned the entire mission of the campus around as we all in America became part of the total mobilization for getting behind the national war effort. And one of the key figures you talked about was the president at the time, Q.M. Smith, who I understand was quite a character.
Q.M. Smith was indeed quite a character. I don't know that I would go so far as to characterize him as a proponent of the military program, as a proponent of the survival of the university, with a very clear understanding that this was the way the university, then college, would survive.
He was a pragmatic politician who figured he would capitalize on the situation to the college's benefit.
He had been capitalizing on every situation he'd ever seen to the college's benefit.
And when the war came along, how did he see this as an opportunity for Middle Tennessee Teachers College to join in the war effort and to make a contribution?
Q.M. Smith, along with many other people, saw the war effort coming well before the war actually started and took advantage of programs that the government had in place. They took many of the New Deal programs and converted them into defense preparedness programs. That was something I didn't know until I did the research for this presentation. He arrived on campus in 1938. In 1939, he had gotten National Youth Administration funding to build the landing strip at MTSU. The following November, he got $1,000 from the Civilian Conservation Corps to build a hangar for the airplanes. It's still in use, by the way, on campus. And in 1940, he got government funding for a civilian pilot training program, which was a 35-hour course including flight training, and 31 MTSU students earned their flight licenses. So he was taking advantage of the military preparedness before there was a war.
Is this the beginning of what we now call the Department of Aerospace here on campus?
It is the beginning of what we now call the Department of Aerospace. Then in the fall of 1941, he got, again, NYA funding from the government to build Voorhees Industrial Building, which is also still in use, and to fund training in draftsmanship, sheet metal, woodworking, trigonometry, navigation, and within a few weeks added civilian courses in first aid and defense nutrition, whatever that might be. So all of this happens well before Pearl Harbor.
Defense nutrition, for anyone who's ever had K rations, might call that a contradiction in terms, but I don't know how K rations compare with meals ready to eat, but in any event, with the addition of aviation on campus. How did this change the gender makeup? Did it go from mostly female to 50-50, or do you know the proportions?
Not really. That's one of the interesting things, if I can take a little side trip. Q.M. Smith was, as we said, a very fine academic politician. He was very close to then-Governor Prentice Cooper. Prentice Cooper had realized that the future, or a future for Middle Tennessee, generally, not just the school, was in aviation, and created in 1924, I think, but I could be wrong, the Tennessee Bureau of Aviation, which undertook a number of programs to promote aviation in Middle Tennessee, including building airports, training pilots. And interestingly, one of their programs was to train women pilots on the theory that if you could teach women to fly, people would no longer be afraid of flying. And that's where Cornelia Fort was trained. It's where some of the instructors in the program here were trained. And so at that point in time, flying was as much female as it was male, contrary to what you would expect.
Out of necessity?
Out of necessity. Women were willing to do it. And there was sort of a, gee, if women can do it, anybody can do it kind of attitude.
We'll be right back with more MTSU on the Record right after this.
Expanding Your Horizons is an annual hands-on science and math conference for middle and high school girls. EYH enables girls to investigate careers in science and math and to talk with female leaders in those fields that are so essential to our nation's future. EYH also provides the girls with fun hands-on activities and allows them to meet girls with similar interests. I'm Dr. Judith Iriarte-Gross, EYH Director.
For all the latest MTSU information, go to mtsunews.com.
With the Salute to Veterans coming up at MTSU, we're talking about how World War II transformed the university with retired history professor Dr. Ellen Garrison. 23 football players in the fall of 1942. They weren't there to play football, so the coach, Wink Midget, started to teach a course twice a week in industrial accounting that was paid for by the War Production Board. So there was essentially no football team during the war years at MTSU?
There was no football team during the war years. They played, I believe, one season after the war started.
I thought it was interesting because my father was also a coach and a teacher, and I wondered if this was the beginning of coaches doing double duty and actually becoming instructors at MTSU, or if that had been going on all along.
I don't know. Wink Midget, I know, was not teaching. He was strictly a coach until the war came along and Smith got this money to support him, although he did have training in accounting.
Aside from aviation, did the women sign up for any of these other war-centric courses that we're talking about?
They did. We had courses, again, Q.M. Smith got federal funding to teach courses in math, in science, in industrial arts, in health education, in drafting, in metalwork, and urged the female students who remained on campus to take those courses and so they would be prepared to contribute to the war. Ann Smith was encouraging the girls who had all come here to be teachers, which was a very acceptable thing for a woman to do, and apparently got significant enrollment in those courses. I don't know whether they saw it as part of the war effort. I have no idea why they did it. And none of the interviews I read with students at the time told me why they did it. They just did. I have no real clue about the motivation and would like to know more. There's a lot about this I wish I knew more.
What was the secret of Q.M. Smith's success? You hear him talking about all this federal funding he was able to get for folks, and here we are in the midst of a recession, and I'm saying, where is Q.M. Smith when we need him?
I do not know. Q.M. Smith is a very enigmatic figure. He had previously been head of the Department of Education. He was one of the first two graduates from here. He was the first president of the Alumni Association. He went on to become president of Tennessee Tech. left there under less than ideal circumstances. Within 7 months, was president here. At several points during his career, there were strong challenges made to his authority by members of the faculty and or community, and he withstood them all. I have not yet been into his correspondence with Governor Cooper, and I suspect some of the secret is in there.
Governor Prentice Cooper.
Prentice Cooper.
Was governor at the time, and what was his role in helping to facilitate MTSU's entry into the war effort?
Several things. Within a day of the announcement of the ACER Air Cadet Training Program, he sent Colonel Herbert Fox, who was head of the Tennessee Bureau of Aviation, to Washington, D.C., to lobby for designation of the college as one of the schools that would have an aviation program. Apparently, he was a very effective lobbyist. Governor Cooper eventually had the state legislature prepared, because they knew that there were going to have to be some building modifications and capital improvements if Middle Tennessee and other schools were approved. The day before they were approved, he helped get a bill through the legislature to make funding available to make the necessary renovations. And so the day after we got the approval for building here, Prentice Cooper wrote QM Smith that, yes, I have the $30,000 you need for renovation. So he was a major player, and apparently Smith was pretty well aware of his interest in aviation. It's also the reason we have the air base up at Smyrna.
Yeah, I was about to say that ACER, which was the Air Corps Enlisted Reserve, and the Tennessee Bureau of Aviation had a major impact both on the city of Murfreesboro and on the town of Smyrna.
They got the air base up in Smyrna, which even before it was an air base was training, I believe, mechanics. The same trip that Fox got the ACER program for us, he got funding for the MTSU Municipal Airport.
Where is the airport located at that time? Where the campus airport? I mean,
the campus airport, and that's slightly overstating it. It was an airstrip. It was right next to the hangar on the field that would, interestingly enough, become Veterans Village after the war. Kind of in there where the business and aerospace and mass comm buildings are in that part of campus.
Mm-hmm.
The entire campus stopped at Jones Hall.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really a fairly good distance from where the student body was.
Right. We're having to take this back to 1940-something proportions. What we have on the east side of campus, where most of the campus growth has been over the past several decades, it just wasn't there.
Wasn't there. They didn't get any new buildings. What they got was renovation of existing buildings. The cafeteria had to be renovated. Why, I don't know, but I'm sure to come up to military specs. And interestingly enough, because of that, the football players all lost their jobs. The dorm was renovated, and they did build a new physics lab.
It became Middle Tennessee State College. There was a name change also involved with the war mobilization effort.
The name of the university would be changing, and Middle Tennessee's curriculum would begin to offer accelerated curriculum in support of defense, and that the new curriculum would not only align courses with defense need, in things like math and science and industrial engineering, but it would also be the beginning of a redefinition, this which is not the word he used, but it would be the beginning of a transition from the college's identity as a teacher's college to a college. And by the end of the war, in fact, it has become just a college, and the name has changed.
And some of the girls had to move out in a heck of a hurry. When you told this anecdote, I was just aghast that they did this in such an abrupt and apparently rude manner.
It wasn't rude. It was just QM Smith being QM Smith. Understanding that the program was approved by the Secretary, what would become the Secretary of Defense, on January 23rd, 1943. And 2 days later, we had a lobbyist in Washington agitating for us to get one of the programs. On the 20th, on the 6th day of February, QM Smith found out that we had been approved for the program with the stipulations about the various renovations and things he would have to do. And on the 20th day of February at 11 o'clock in the morning, the girls, who at that point were housed in Lyon Hall, were told they had until 5 o'clock to move out of the dorm into Rutledge Hall. And that was on, I believe, a Friday. And if there were girls away for the weekend, they simply boxed up all their stuff and left it out in the hall over in Rutledge.
Surprise, girls.
Surprise, yes.
So welcome back Monday morning.
And what I think was one of the most understatements of the year, because at this point they now have got them doubled up and tripled up in rooms, was Jane Tucker, who was student then, said, "We became very intimate with each other during the next few years." Apparently it must have just been
jam up and jelly tight.
Jam up and jelly tight. And I suspect that there was a whole lot you knew about people that you probably didn't want to know.
We'll take one more quick break. We'll be back with more MTSU on the Record right after this.
The MTSU Educational Talent Search, or METS, reaches out to students in grades 6 through 12 in Coffee, Grundy, and Warren counties. We provide youngsters who have college potential with educational and financial aid counseling and guide them as they determine their educational and career goals. More than 95% of Educational Talent Search students graduate from high school, and more than 79% enroll in post-secondary education. This is METS Coordinator Debbie Frisbee.
For all the latest MTSU information, go to mtsunews.com.
Dr. Ellen Garrison, retired MTSU history professor, is our guest today, talking about, in conjunction with the Salute to Veterans coming up on November 19th, the transformation of MTSU, or what was then called Middle Tennessee Teachers College, to Middle Tennessee State College, later MTSU, and all that that entailed on both an educational and social level. There was a fellow named Lieutenant Everett Blaylock, and he took charge, I believe, of the cadets on campus whose names all started with the letter P.
That was our first class. That was the glamour branch of the service. Men wanted to enroll in it. They did so. The Air Force didn't have any way to train them. And both the draft boards and the War Manpower Commission were looking very hungrily at all this available manpower, so the Air Corps had to come up with something to do with them. And that's when they set up these Air Corps Enlisted Reserve programs to sort of remedial, to bring all of the cadets who had qualified up to speed so they could go straight into to pilot training. It was a combination of the last of college and basic training in the military. And
so it was on kind of an accelerated basis, because they needed people to absorb a great deal of information in a short amount of time.
They also needed to, these men wanted to be pilots. They wanted to do their duty. So they were given, made use of, trained, prepared, ready to go when the time came. I call them shovel-ready people. Lieutenant Blaylock came to campus, and the first class truly did. Apparently, they had this very long list of qualified people, and they needed to get them all into some kind of training, and they just went down the alphabet, and every so many people got sent to a particular campus. So our first class of cadets' last names all started with P.
It was totally at random. There's no rhyme or reason to the alphabetizing or getting people all named with the letter P.
Only because they simply took the list they had of people who had qualified for the Corps and marked off blocks of them that were already in alphabetical order.
And some of the things these young men had to learn were military drill, ceremonies and inspections, first aid, customs and courtesies, hygiene, sanitation, and guard duty. Interesting they throw hygiene in there.
The provision of academic instruction was always done by the college. The faculty board meeting before the cadets arrived, Q.M. Smith asked the faculty how many of them could teach math and physics if they had to. A number of them said they could, and people who had been English teachers and domestic science teachers and I don't know what else were converted to math and physics teachers. And all 15 of them provided the academic instruction. The curriculum itself, what they were to teach, what they were to cover, as it is in ROTC classes now, was prescribed by the military. And theoretically, Blaylock supervised it. They also had to make, in the sense of making sure that what they were supposed to teach, they were teaching. But the actual instruction itself was done entirely by faculty who did not work directly for Blaylock.
We're not talking about military taking over what faculty have traditionally come to know as academic freedom, right?
I don't think there was any such thing when Q.M. Smith was here, but no. No, the academic side was what the Air Corps contracted for.
Right. To the best of what you were able to comprehend from your research, was the cooperation between the administration and the faculty and the military pretty cordial, or were there some rough bumps?
I have an impression it was pretty cordial, that they were operating under so much pressure and everybody wanted to contribute to the war, and faculty weren't as uppity as they are now. They just did what they were told.
Well,
I say as an ex-faculty member.
Yes, you have a right to say that because you are an ex-faculty member. There was a social separation.
Oh, it was much worse than that.
Oh, yes. They were kept on, they didn't even get to go to class together.
They were kept, and I've always rather suspected that this had more to do with accountability than it did with social mores. The cadets were taught on a separate floor. The library was open to them only on certain nights. They had exclusive use of the tennis courts on certain days. There was a general physical separation, but I think it was more for purposes of accountability than any sense they had to keep them separated, because they were allowed to date the girls on certain nights of a week, and Lieutenant Blaylock's wife and the head of student government cooperated to put on weekly dances.
So it wasn't so much that they were afraid of romance going too far. They just wanted these young men to keep their focus on being as well-trained as they possibly could and well-educated as they possibly could for the job that they would have to do in the war effort.
And they wanted to be sure that resources from the government were being used to serve government students.
I see.
That's why they had the separate classes.
Make sure that the government money was not being wasted and was being spent for what it was intended to be spent for.
Exactly, not being misdirected.
Do we have any idea how post-war life was different after all of this enormous influx of money and materiel and changing social situations?
It changed pretty radically, and it changed radically before the end of the war. Q.M. Smith, in the same way he was getting NYA and CCC money to prepare for this influx of military training, he saw the handwriting on the wall. He knew that the Air Corps would be able to train their own pilots. And within several weeks of the ACER program being closed, because they had as many pilots in the pipeline as they needed, he already had appointed the registrar to be in charge of veterans education, and he had brought 5 veterans to campus to study. He had also drawn up plans for constructing what became Veterans Village. So he knew that was coming, and his realignment, I mean, I say that because I think he was, but his realignment of the curriculum was with one eye on a post-war world and how to bring men on campus, and they did. Very much so.
We're going to take one more brief break, and we'll be right back with more on MTSU on the Record.
The Concrete Industry Management Program at MTSU fills the need for trained personnel who know concrete technology and techniques. Our alumni go into the marketplace grounded in basic math and science and able to promote products or services related to the industry. Our participation in the Academic Common Market ensures talented students in other states a chance to enroll on an in-state tuition basis. This is Dr. Heather Brown, Director of the program.
To find out more information on this or other university programs, visit mtsunews.com.
Dr. Ellen Garrison, retired MTSU history professor, is our guest today. Veterans Day is usually such a somber occasion, and rightfully so. It is only right that it be serious and that it be taken seriously. But that having been said, let's end with a little bit of humor, a little bit of an up note here. You told me you had a couple of funny stories about MTSU's or MTTC's transition from a peacetime college to a wartime college.
We talked about on the 20th of February, the girls were given 4 hours to move out of the dorm so that the cadets could move in on March 1st. What QM Smith apparently hadn't thought about was that when the girls moved, they took all the coat hangers, and they needed coat hangers for the cadets to use in their dorm. And so the day before the cadets were due to show up, QM Smith issued a public plea through the local newspaper asking Murfreesboro citizens to please bring coat hangers to campus, and so that they would have enough coat hangers for the cadets, and they could either bring them to campus or they could take them to the Red Cross.
Now, during the war, there were all kinds of drives. There were scrap metal drives. There were rubber drives, usually contributing to the war effort. This is the first coat hanger drive I've ever heard of in connection with World War II.
Absolutely.
Well, let's call that the girls' revenge, I guess.
The girls' revenge. Well, you can understand why they took their coat hangers.
Of course, they had to have something to put their dresses on.
Yeah, and apparently it was the only thing QM Smith hadn't thought ahead about.
And your other story was?
The other story that really is just my favorite about this period. They, as I said, they took 15 in Middle Tennessee faculty members, including Dr. Thelma Burkett, who was a much beloved English teacher. The girls were very fond of her, regarded her as a sort of mother figure. And it so happened she had once had a course in physics, so they put her in charge of teaching physics to the ACER cadets. And the very first day she walked into class, all of the students stood up and came to attention, and she told one of the girls she'd been teaching that it absolutely scared her to death. She didn't know what to do with them. And apparently that was the most memorable thing that happened to her during the war.
Poor woman.
Poor woman. Life. It certainly wasn't like teaching girls.
I hope she recovered.
I hope she did.
Do you have any World War II veterans in your family on a personal note?
Not in my immediate family, but I have, what I do have currently is I have a son who's a major in the Army and who has served in Kosovo and Iraq twice. He's back home now. He's getting ready to be deployed to Afghanistan.
For tour of duty number 3.
Tour of duty number 3.
Thank you, Dr. Garrison. I appreciate you doing this. Dr. Ellen Garrison, retired MTSU history professor, and for all the men and women of the armed forces, we thank you for your service.
MTSU On the Record, a news and information program about Middle Tennessee State University, is produced by the university's Marketing and Communications Office, which is solely responsible for its content. Read more about MTSU at our website, mtsunews.com. Podcasts of this program are available at mtsunews.com and on iTunes.